So the New York Times story has now dropped, and we now also have a detailed series of statements from the journalists behind the story, Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane, via the interview I was fortunate enough to conduct and premiere on the Project Unity YouTube channel. The article has definitely caused some waves in both the UFO community and the mainstream sector. And today, I'm here with Michael W. Hall, aka the paranormal lawyer, and we are here to discuss the most recent article in the New York Times by Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal, discussing the possibility of UFO crash retrieval programs, which is bolstered by quotes included within the article made by Dr. Eric W. Davis and former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Michael and I are going to talk about a certain area of this article that we feel, for all intents and purposes, has been overlooked by the majority of the UFO community, and so that is something we want to highlight today in this discussion, amongst other things. Now, some of you will be aware that Michael Hall was the first person within the UFO community to be contacted by New York Times investigative reporter Ralph Blumenthal regarding, at this point, his and Leslie Kane's interest in pursuing the Admiral Wilson leaks for a potential story in the Times. Now that the story is broken, we can see that there is no direct mention of the Admiral Wilson, Eric Davis document leaks, aside from a little detail that we will address and expand upon throughout this discussion. I also want to apologize for not being on camera for this discussion. I was using my phone during the recording, and I was not in a location where it would be easy for me to do a video, so I do apologize for that. But without further ado, we are now going to jump into a pre-recorded interview that I did with Michael yesterday. I just want to make a quick disclaimer. I lost the first 8 minutes or so of this recording through Skype, and so the very first part of this conversation will be taken from Michael's Facebook live stream that he had running during the interview. So the audio quality will increase after the first 8 minutes or so, just bear with us on that. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy.
Well, I'm listening to you on Skype all the way from the UK, and right now it is 5:45 a.m. my time in the Pacific Northwest, and I am recording on Facebook Live on the Michael W. Hall channel and on the UFO I-Team channel, just in case we get cut off on one or either one of the Facebook pages. And I thought it would be really important to, first of all, give you all the kudos in the world regarding your interview of Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane yesterday. Oh my gosh, you were a consummate professional under pressure, literally asking all the questions that everyone had on their minds, and there was a lot more background that came out of your interview regarding their thoughts, their feelings about the article and how it went. So congratulations, by the way.
Thank you so much for that, Michael. I mean, I was, panicking before it happened. I was like, I don't know if this is going to go well. Is everyone going to like what I ask? And, am I going to fold under pressure? Am I going to be able to ask the right questions? Because obviously these two individuals, they know how to work their way through an interview. And, this is above a level that I've ever interacted with. So I am unbelievably happy that the community on a whole, 99.9% of the response I've got back were saying that it was fantastic and that they loved it.
Yes. And for you sh stepping up to the plate and asking some of the hard questions, I can't imagine that anyone else in the mainstream media would have really kept their feet to the fire on some of those questions that were very appropriately asked, by the way. I mean, there were, some interesting things in the article that needed to be clarified, and I thought both of them, I mean, literally, these are the top of the line as far as journalistic, capability goes. Both of them, Leslie and Ralph, did a wonderful job, I think, of responding to your questions.
Oh, I think so too. I think that they did really, really well, and they responded within, within the parameters that they could. I'm sure that there were elements of the discussion that they wish they could have addressed in a further detail, but they just simply can't. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I would get that impression. But no, I think that they did a really good job of clarifying on some of the issues. And a lot of people have been, wondering how it even happened that I managed to get this interview, because obviously I'm quite a small platform with Project Unity, and we'll get into that. But I think that, I think that it's important that they interacted with someone who's, you know, very much within the community, just someone who's trying to figure this stuff out, because, you know, we all want to hear the important questions asked. And I think the most frustrating thing for people, at least within the UFO community, is when you get a story like this and then you get interviews that are happening in the mainstream where they're just misquoting or they don't understand or they're not applying a level of background knowledge within the subject. So they can't, you know, they can't tackle any of the core issues. So I'm really happy that they gave me the opportunity to do this, because I think with some contribution from the community in regards to questions, I was able to formulate, a really kind of concise, form of questioning in regards to what we want to know specifically, not so much the mainstream. The mainstream is finding things out now, and that's really good and it's extremely important. But I think it's important for us as well, because we need to know certain things, and sometimes we need to know specifics a little bit more specifically than people within the mainstream.
Yes, exactly. And you have been involved with this article from the very beginning. You know, I know that we discussed the idea that I was contacted by Ralph Blumenthal on May 11th, way back then. I can't believe it's been that long since I initially got the call from Ralph about a follow-up article, you know, from the December 16th, 2017 initial New York Times article. And of course, you knew about that right away. And of course, it was a lengthy period of time between the two articles. But I'll tell you what, we are going to talk about today, I believe, you and I, some what I call mic drop revelations that actually appear in this new article of July 23rd, 2020, that I think most people have overlooked completely so far.
It does seem like there has been, some statements that have been overlooked in regards to what they may be connected to. So yeah, that is the core area of the discussion today. So why don't you kick this off with what you feel you find is the most important aspect of what we're about to discuss in regards to quotes?
Okay, wonderful. The bottom line with me was that my client Grant Cameron, basically obtained this Admiral Wilson smoking gun memo of the century, as Richard Dolan calls it, early on, actually late in 2018. And then on January 2nd of 2019, he sends me a copy of it. And so, literally, I have been living with this document, along with Grant and a few other folks, since January 2nd of 2019, going over every single line of the Admiral Wilson memo, trying to decipher what it's actually saying, and getting into the details, vetting, you know, the document as far as dates and people and programs that are mentioned in there. There was some language that was very
off this world, alarming language that Richard Dolan initially pointed out, that, basically the second to the last page of the Admiral Wilson memo mentions that there is some materials that supposedly, I'll just quote it. It says, the program manager said they didn't know. This is the program manager for the unacknowledged special access program that Admiral Wilson found that he was trying to get read into. The program manager said they didn't know where it was from, talking about a craft. They had some idea on this. It was technology that was not of this earth, quote, not made by man, not by human hands. That's what Richard Dolan read in actually 2006, he says, saw a portion of this memo. That's always stuck in the back of my mind as well. Then we have the actual New York Times article that came out. And initially when I read the article, I was waiting for some kind of further revelation regarding the Admiral Wilson memo in the New York Times second shoe drop article. And so I was scouring it and scouring. We've got, Lou Elizondo mentioned. We've got You know, various insiders, Harry Reid, you know, the from the Senate mentioned and all that kind of stuff. And then finally, there is a mention of Dr. Eric Davis. And now, as we all know, Dr. Davis has been noncommittal about the veracity of the Admiral Wilson memo. No comment. He says he cannot make comments on that at all. Other people, like Hal Puthoff, Admiral Wilson himself, have mentioned it. And then Admiral Wilson says he doesn't remember, you know, the details, and basically denied that the memo actually took place or that he was a part of it. But of course, in the memo, it mentions that Admiral Wilson told Eric Davis that he would have to deny anything about it. So when the New York Times article comes out, it literally mentions that there is a quote in the article. It says, by Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane, Mr. Davis, quote, who now works for Aerospace Corporation, a defense contractor, said that he gave a classified briefing to a Defense Department agency as recently as March, that would have been March 2020, this year, about retrievals from off-world vehicles not made on this Earth. Now, when I read that the first time, it kind of went right over my my psyche. I'm going, yeah. But then when I realized after I read it, where did I hear that language before? Where have I heard that before? And I'm going, this was language almost lifted word for word from the Admiral Wilson memo. And they are quoting Eric Davis as reiterating the fact that he literally briefed a classified briefing of a Department of Defense agency as recently as March about retrievals from off-world world vehicles not made on this Earth. So I came up with a little article of my own, basically, titled it Historic Alien / UFO Crash Retrieval Disclosure Mic Drop. And then I added the actual, in parentheses, get ready for a brand new round of Pulitzer Prizes, I believe, here regarding, maybe Leslie is going to get hers this time around, I'm hoping, maybe even Helene as well, but Ralph Blumenthal for sure. The idea being that Dr. Eric Davis, I believe, in this article confirms for the first time ever to Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane of the New York Times, the content and veracity of the Admiral Wilson UFO smoking gun leak of the century.
Well, to give it a direct quote, because it says it was technology that was not of this earth, not made by man, not by human hands. So it's the fact that it says not of this earth. I know it may seem pedantic to some that we're almost like we're focusing on a micro element, but there are many ways to word technology that's supposedly extraterrestrial. And to say not made of this earth or not of this earth, that's not really a normal terminology, in my opinion, in terms of how you would normally word that, especially in an article. And so it seems to me, at least, this is a direct correlation to the Eric Davis notes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and previously, Stephen Greenstreet had tried to pin Eric Davis down on this memo, on his some of his interviews that he has given. And Eric Davis has been very, very guarded in his responses. And he says, I cannot comment on that due to my clearances that I currently have. And of course, they're also in the New York Times article confirming that he is still working, you know, for this aerospace corporation, and that he probably does have then more or continuing, you know, clearances that he has to be wary of. But the fact that Eric Davis actually comes out now and mentions you know, the idea that he has been briefing Defense Department agencies about, and this is an interesting quote, it doesn't say about retrievals of off-world vehicles made on this earth, not on this earth. It says about retrievals from off-world vehicles, not made on this earth. Now, when I first read that, I said, maybe that's just a glitch in semantics, in grammar. You know, why would they say about retrievals from off-world vehicles? Then I got to thinking, the New York Times is the cream of the crop, the top journalistic, documentation that we have in mainstream media. They know every word that goes into an article. My take on this about retrievals from off-world vehicles could be there are things taken from these off-world vehicles. Potentially material, of course, technology, of course, maybe even bodies. About retrievals from off-world vehicles not made of this earth. Anyway, to get Eric Davis to actually say this, I think is a major, what I call, mic drop revelation. This is the first time anyone involved in the Admiral Wilson memo has gone anywhere near confirming the content and the veracity of the memo. Thank you for taking the time, because I literally have been chomping at the bit ever since the 23rd to try to get someone to talk to about this. And you're the perfect outlet for the idea that there is more to this New York Times second shoe drop article than I think people realize.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to bring up with you, are you aware of the, now I can't remember what date this was tweeted on. It wasn't that long ago. It was only last week. Are you aware of the tweet that Christopher Mellon put up regarding the Admiral Wilson leaks in some format?
You know, I might not be. You can elucidate me on what it said.
Yes, there's a guy on Twitter called Dr. Sunshine, and he was asking, he'd tweeted Christopher saying, Chris, why not bring in this Wilson guy and ask him to spill the beans? And Christopher Mellon responded with, the Congressional Oversight Committees have that option, but I doubt they take this seriously enough to pursue. And then he says, the author is not commenting, and the Admiral, brackets, as promised in the memo, close brackets, disavows it. So for now, it remains a case of he said, she said. Now, before I jump in on your opinion, I want people to realize that Christopher Mellon, former Deputy Assistant Undersecretary of Defense, is an extremely serious person who is very careful with how he words his public statements. And he says very clearly here, not the supposed author, not maybe the author. He says the author. And he also says, as promised in the memo, not as supposedly promised in the potential real memo. He says, as promised in the memo. So are you aware of that comment that he brought up?
This is the first time I've heard that comment. So, oh my, that just adds more weight to the whole idea of this memo basically as proven, as far as I can tell, to the legal standard by a preponderance of the evidence, the truth and veracity of it. This just adds more and more weight to that idea. That literally Christopher Mellon, another insider, is tying potentially Eric Davis as the author again. And the fact that, Admiral Wilson in the memo itself stated to Eric Davis at the time that the memo was being recorded or written down, that he basically would have to deny anything in the memo anyway.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, because Christopher, I'll highlight this, is very particular with how he words things publicly. And he could have very easily said the author is not commenting, or he could have said the supposed author is not commenting, and the Admiral has recently declined any involvement in this, and cited the recent articles in which the Admiral, has given his denials. He could have genuinely just gone down the route of speaking about the Admiral's denial being a recent thing within the article, but he specifically relays it back to the fact that the Admiral said he would deny any and all allegations if this information was to come out within the Eric Davis note. So I feel this is a very clear pointer that Christopher is trying to get people to realize subtly this is legitimate.
Yeah. Oh, that's quite a revelation. That is a really good analysis of see, these are the things I believe that are little crumb drops that are out there that folks like yourself are able to put the dots together that other people just skip over. And I think this is very fascinating. Now, we have to realize that literally Dr. Eric Davis, from all of my research and admiration, seems to be one of the most smartest guys on the planet. He is embroiled in the middle of a major, major disclosure regarding not just UFOs. Everyone knows, and he's even mentioned, that UFOs have been proven beyond a reasonable doubt himself. That's one of his quotes. Not just UFOs, but aliens and crash retrievals and alien technology, you know, being retrieved. So when you're a guy like him, he cannot disclose what he knows, of course. But I have a feeling that he is slowly but surely going around the idea that he can't disclose completely. But the fact that he was interviewed by this in this New York Times article, he actually was able to squeak out a new Easter egg for all of us, I believe. Literally, when he says that he is now confirming that he's done these classified briefings with Defense Department agencies as early as March, by the way, of this year, and dealing with retrievals from off-world vehicles not made of this earth. Now, he can get away with that kind of statement in a general way, but literally, I believe it goes all the way back to confirming the actual content of the Admiral Wilson memo.
Well, this is the thing. You know, these people, they have to be extremely careful. We know they have to be extremely careful. And they, you know, they know this, and they have to tread a very fine line. But I don't believe that individuals such as Christopher Mellon or Luis Elizondo or, you know, Eric Davis or Hal Puthoff, I don't believe that these people want to keep things back and keep things sequestered. I think that they desperately want information to get out, and they would love to be able to speak about the Admiral Wilson leaks without any sort of repercussion. But I think that they, you know, they have to toe a very fine line that basically 99% of the population, neither me nor you nor anyone listening to this, I would imagine, has had to be involved in that type of apparatus of security and clearances and obviously professional and personal consequences from basically divulging classified information. So we can't be too aggressive with these people in regards to you know, demanding that they release classified information. But at the same time, you have to really take apart the things that they say and the things that they do and the, you know, the statements they give, because this is a time where actually the small details are the big details. And I think that people will sometimes, as you said, breeze over just casual tweets by Christopher Mellon saying things like the author is not commenting and the Admiral promised in the memo. These are important things. These are basically, this is evidence of them going as far as they feel they can go, in my opinion. And I just feel that, you know, people are too heavy on the fact that, you know, they need to drop everything at once. They are dropping everything they can, in my opinion. And if they try to drop everything at once, it might just completely ruin everything. It might just deplatform everything. They might even get arrested. Who knows? It's a very difficult scenario we're dealing with in terms of the superstructure, because we don't fully understand the superstructure that's keeping the secrecy in the black. I think what my point is that we need to focus on the little details of people like this, because it's the little details that they're trying to drop.
Yeah, no, it's happening all around us on a daily basis. You know, we've got the folks that are the young guns out there doing the research diligently on many fronts. We've got yourself at Project Unity. We've got the old gunslingers, you know, like Grant Cameron and Richard Doan. Not old, I'm sorry about that. I'm just as old as they are. But Grant Cameron and Richard Dolan and Leslie, Melinda Leslie. I'm sorry. It's a little early in the morning. Melinda Leslie and folks, and of course, you know, Linda Moulton Howe and all those folks that have been doing this for decades out there, basically coming at this idea and chipping away at the big picture. And literally, I am saying that if this was a giant courtroom and this was a trial that we were all participating in, literally, this is all collateral evidence that goes into the trier of fact, which would be the jury, which now is the entire planet, you know, picking apart the evidence that we are presenting and coming up with a verdict. And when you have people coming in to testify that they have different parts of the story, and they are able to corroborate certain elements of that story, when you look at the big picture, then that's when you put the whole thing together and you realize that this is about as close as we could ever come at this point to full disclosure without complete confirmation from the federal government or the president of the United States or whoever that all of these things are true. So I believe that we literally are becoming coming to the point where we have confirmation via the weight of the evidence now that these things are happening on a daily basis, and it's not going to take too much more to tip that house of cards completely over, and everything will be coming out soon.
Well, as a few people have said, the toothpaste is pretty much out of the tube at this point, and it's just a matter of squeezing the rest out. And it's a poignant moment in time. I really do think that it is a poignant moment in time that people need to be more turned on to this subject, more aware of it. And one thing that I've said a few times now, I've mentioned it a couple times in recent videos since the publication came out, is that the UFO community on a whole is oversaturated sometimes with information and different claims. And you know, we pride ourselves on digging deep into these subjects, and so many of us have you know, quite a detailed background knowledge of things going back to, you know, circa 1947 and beforehand. And so it's frustrating sometimes, and I understand some of the frustrations that have come out after this publication, because a lot of people in the community feel that there wasn't enough information, that, you know, oh, there could have been so much more about crash retrievals, there could have been more about the Admiral Wilson documents. And, you know, all I would say is a few things. One, it's a progression. It is. You can't have everything at once. You just can't. And it is a progression. And the world outside of the UFO community is no way near as informed as, you know, basically one of our most uninformed members, I would say. You know, there's so much information to digest. And if you're not taking part in an active research of that information, you're not going to be privy to, you know, understanding things about S4 and Lockheed Martin and reverse engineering, or even going back to, you know, the potential Nazi German connections to electrogravitics. This stuff flies over the face of most people. And I think that people in the community, including myself, because we're so used to going through all this information, we forget that the outside world, because we are a niche at the moment, unfortunately, the outside world does not have the same information. They have not looked at the same information. And so for them, a New York Times article that speaks about crash retrievals, crash retrieval programs, sensitive, you know, Department of Defense briefings on retrieval. This is mind blowing to your average consumer and to your average person who digests mainstream media. And so I would just ask people to not be too disheartened, because there is an ongoing investigation and subsequent publication effort. This is ongoing. This is not the end of anything. This is very much a marker, in my opinion, of the beginning. We have just had mention of crash retrieval programs in the biggest, or at least one of the biggest, media, mainstream media publication platforms in the entire world. That is game changing.
Yes. You know, when we have to step back in reality a little bit, The people that have been living with potential disclosure of alien life on other planets, visiting our planet, you know, crashing and retrieving technology that we've done here potentially on the planet here, we have to realize that this is a huge revelation that we've even gotten this far in a relatively short period of time since that first article came out in the New York Times, only December 16th of 2017. If anyone in the field would have asked themselves even 5 years ago or a decade ago that they thought maybe that they would be in this position at this point, I don't think anybody could have even thought of being in this position. Then it also, one last thing that I think is so important to keep in mind, because you mentioned, you know, getting the toothpaste out of the tube. And in reality, it's that last small bit that is very difficult to get out of the tube of a toothpaste. It always is the last part.
That's pretty sure.
Pretty doggone done. And you just, you know, you don't have any more. You need to get some more out. But here's the bottom line I've always tried to keep in mind. What is so important that the deep state, whoever they are, MJ-12, whoever, has wanted to or needed to keep this under wraps for over 70 years? What is so important? That means to me that even the truth that the ufology community is after could be quite amazing and shocking, is what I'm saying. We need to be prepared, all of us, I think, to think outside the box in reality of what really is going to be disclosed.
You know, I completely agree with that, Michael. I don't think that's something that's really brought up as much as it should be, just in respects to, you know, like, why has this happened? Like, we all argue over what's happened, you know, how much reverse engineering, if any, is taking place, how much recovery has taken place, how many visitations, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there isn't a whole lot of discussion really right now, at least, as to why this has been kept so secret for so long. Everyone has different speculative reasons, but I mean, in terms of what I mean when I'm talking about people who are not asking that question, I mean more about mainstream media and senators and people like that. There's plenty of people in the community who are asking the why question of why this has been sequestered, but in the public and in the mainstream, I think that's probably going to be the next step. Like, the more information that comes out with more publications, more articles, more whistleblowers, or more people who have been given clearance to speak out, that little bit of toothpaste is going to come out. And I think that at that point, we are going to have very influential and what we consider in the mainstream to be very serious people asking that kind of question. Why has this been kept secret for so long? You know, maybe this is something that the transparency bill that Marco Rubio's proposed could actually end up dislodging enough information for people, key people within the public sector, to start asking questions, and within government.
Yes, exactly. I am really looking forward to whatever kind of report comes out in that regard, because indeed, if the Senate Intelligence Committee is able to pry that last part of the toothpaste tube out, or at least enough of it where we could then start really having some follow-up questions, that I think is going to be an end game. I mean, I think there's not much more than that can be disclosed without really getting into the meat of the matter of what they are doing to keep all these things secret. And you know, Jay, there is another good example in the Admiral Wilson memo itself that points to the fact of how important some of these revelations might be. On the last page of the memo, there is a point where Admiral Wilson goes to his friends and colleagues at the Pentagon and literally is spoken to by Jacques Gansler. About the whole idea. He's commiserating that he's been shut down, threatened, you know, to lose stars and, you know, pension and all that kind of stuff if he tries to go forward. Jacques Gansler is then telling him, oh, yeah, well, you just, you know, take it as a grain of salt. You know, UFOs do exist, but alien abductions don't exist.
Mm.
That is an example to me that the insiders knew that Admiral Wilson was quite upset about not having a need to know about this major program that should be under his control as the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, second command of all the intelligence departments of the military. And they were worried about him potentially going rogue, I believe.
Yeah.
And so I think Jacques Gansler was tasked by the rest of whoever is out there on controlling this mechanism to say, okay, listen, we don't know if he's going to really flip and go to the other side on this. So we want you to give him some disinformation just in case he goes out there and blows everything out of the water. Even the UFO community would call his bluff and not believe him because he's saying that alien abductions never happen. So what I'm saying is that even today, or even back then in 2002 and 1997, there is still that thing that they need to keep an eye and a close control on whatever is out there that is the truth. And they're willing to go to pretty much any lengths to do that. But then again, now we're seeing the chinks in the dike opening up. The actual, dam seems to be cracking at this point as far as information trickling out.
I agree. And that leads to speculation, obviously, regarding the content of the latest New York Times article, because a lot of people were expecting that there was going to be a lot of content about the Admiral Wilson leaks. And, you know, I'm going to be perfectly honest, like, and speak from a slightly more informed position, because, you know, me and Mr. X and myself, we did this 3-hour breakdown of the Admiral Wilson leaks. It was up for less than 24 hours before we were contacted by Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Keene. And, you know, without going into specifics on what happened, because, you know, to be honest, a lot of it I'm not actually fully aware, but I can confirm that Mr. X did have frequent conversations with them, including a very long sit down. Essential briefing, you know, in which he was breaking down what was put into our video and further information. Now, I don't actually know exactly what was discussed, but I know that they've got an interest in this story because they actually, you know, with very politely, and we agreed it wasn't a forceful thing whatsoever. My hand was not bent in any way, and I have a lot of respect for Ralph and Leslie, so I don't want this to be looked at as if I'm trying to paint a target on them, because I'm absolutely not. But they did request that this video go private for a moment. And this video is 3 hours of nothing but the Eric Davis Admiral Wilson notes. And so do not think for a second, and this is me speaking to the listeners, really, who are doubting that the coverage of the Admiral Wilson leaks is a likely scenario. Do not doubt that that is something that is still very much in the minds of journalists who are looking to really push things forward. And, you know, this is not over for the Admiral Wilson leaks whatsoever.
Oh, no. Oh, no. This is just the starting gun to the 100-yard dash towards the finish line is what I think. I think now that the New York Times has opened up the door, have literally gone to the sources of the Admiral Wilson memo, Eric Davis, of course, and receiving quotes like this, literally that is just going to be the beginning and a basically green light for other journalists, other people out there that are doing working in the thick of this matter to literally start digging deeper now. I think this will be just the very beginning of the whole idea that the 15-page, almost single-spaced, by the way, Admiral Wilson memo is so chock full of information, things that can be corroborated, that can be followed up on. I think that's what's going to happen next.
I completely agree. I think that something like that. Well, this is the thing with the New York Times. And, you know, again, I'll say there's people that wish there was more information in there, but there is enough information in there. And the New York Times, you know, where they lead, people follow. And when we're talking about publications of other mainstream media outlets, when the New York Times puts something out, it gets put out pretty much everywhere else. And so when you're looking at a story like this, that's opening up a new arena when we're talking about crash retrievals, which have not been talked about in a mainstream media publication like this ever, you know, when you're talking about that type of thing, I think it does give carte blanche essentially to the other publications, the other journals, the other editors to go, you know what, let's have a crack at this. I mean, look, the New York Times is taking this seriously. The New York Times have been putting out stories from 2017 to 2019 to 2020. Yeah, let's jump on this. And I think that that is going to be the opinion, because it's about a destigmatization, and the stigma of this subject has been present for decades. You know, that doesn't just vanish overnight, and there are still little quips. You'll still watch the news and you'll hear the, you know, well, what do you think, Frank? Are we alone out there? And it just makes you want to roll your eyes into the back of your head, because it's like, well, obviously not. No, we're not alone out there. But at the same time, you're seeing a lot less of that. You're seeing a lot more Senate intelligence committees taking things seriously. You see a lot more, oh, we've got brand new reports from fighter pilots. This is a destigmatization process that does take time, but we're now seeing a vast increase in momentum, in my opinion, with articles such as the one that's just come out.
Yeah, and indeed, we are literally dealing with a mindset, changing the mindset of an entire planet. And we're not talking about folks that potentially are into this subject, like yourself and others, myself included. We are talking about people who have no clue about what we're talking about, who have a history and culture and religion and a belief system that needs to be expanded. That's what we're talking about. Right. And in reality, that's what the New York Times is taking a lead upon. They are leading us into a higher consciousness, believe it or not, probably about as fast as most people on the planet can take right now. And I am really excited to see how the younger generations out there, by the way, are dealing with this, because I think they've lived with the reality of the planet being much larger and the universe being much more complicated than we had ever thought as baby boomers, or, you know, whatever past generations have been dealing with this stuff. We have to keep reminding ourselves that I can remember being in high school in 1969 when supposedly we landed on the moon. And my gosh, that has not been that long ago in the collective memory of our society. And now we're talking about the idea that indeed we are not alone in the universe. That's one thing, but that the universe seems to be visiting our planet on a regular basis and probably has been for millennia.
Well, you know, this is, again, this is something that I've brought up as well. And it's the fact that when you're looking at this kind of story coming out, and obviously people becoming aware of it in the way that they are, and the younger generations becoming aware of it, it's really important that the younger generations become aware of it. I'm 25 years old, so I'm just at the beginnings of my adult life, really. And I want to see this stuff really happen. And I think the most important point to focus on when it comes to, like, the fact that things could actually be changing in this time period is, yes, there has been, you know, there has been a structure of control, you know, that predates the Romans. You know, it's not like we're in a unique situation now where the rich benefit and the poor are, you know, subjugated to suffer. Like, that's been kind of the way things have rolled for a long time. But what is the key difference? The internet. The internet is the key difference. Like, I'm telling you, because the capacity to share information in real time across the globe with everyone has completely changed the way in which people are able to learn. And it's completely changed the way in which channels of learning are utilized, i.e. the official programs and national television and news. It can be subverted by more independent research and more independent programming. And so I think we're in a really unique time period in which we have so much information coming our way that people are developing and learning about many different topics, you know, in a time period that they would never have done before. If you think about going back in time to before, you know, when we were just in little villages around the world, you wouldn't have known about bandits coming to the village 20 miles away from you until they were already upon you and you were in trouble at the same time. But now we have, you know, instantaneous communication everywhere, all over the world, all at once. And so you have an ability to learn, you have an ability to research. And I feel that anyone who knocks down this kind of subject and gives to be honest, quite uninformed opinions that haven't come from a research basis, you are, in my opinion, self-selecting ignorance. You're choosing to be ignorant because the information is there. You just have to have the capability to sift through some of the bullshit because there's a lot of it, especially in this subject. But no, I think that, you know, this is so key now because we are in a changing time. We're in an extremely transitory period. We've got, you know, coronavirus. We've got an insane American president. My prime minister is not much better. He's like a discount version of President Trump. We've got, you know, Black Lives Matter, and we've got all of the protests in America, and we've got people wanting different changes. And at the same time, you've got, oh my gosh, you've got the Epstein situation where the elites in horrific circles of networking and child trafficking are being, you know, challenged and brought down with Prince Andrew and all of the, so many things. And then you have on top of that, UFOs, crash retrievals. The world is changing. It is happening in front of our very eyes. And for some people, if they've been living through this for decades or, you know, just years and years of trying to push this forward, it can seem so tiring. But now, and I'm saying this from a fresh perspective as an underdog, as a new person on the block, fresh eyes, as a younger generation person, I'm seeing this happen at a rate that I think is exponential.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm seeing as well. I cannot, I am so pleased to be able to be alive at this point on the planet.
Right.
To be able to observe this and potentially even be a part of this mass awakening of consciousness on the planet. That is why I think it's so important. You mentioned the internet revolutionizing thought on a collective basis. That is why it's so important to keep that internet ability and capability free and be able to forget about these the constrictions that have been put on these things by some of the basic monopolizing companies that own, you know, many of the channels that people have to use pretty much, you know, to get out there. So it's so important that we keep the pressure on the powers that be as far as public opinion goes, because I'll tell you what, it makes a really lot of it makes a heck of a difference. In reality, if the planet and if society comes together and makes up their collective mind that they are going to either not stand for something or stand for something, there is little, if anything, that's going to be stand in their way.
I couldn't agree more. Is there anything else that you kind of wanted to go over with this? I feel like we've covered some really good ground. Obviously, we've done the quotes and the importance of highlighting the correlations between the Admiral Wilson documents and highlight the fact that we do not believe that it's kind of gone into the shadows and there will be further publications. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, Jay, thank you very much for this opportunity. I think it would be advantageous just to kind of recap basically the premise of the idea that I called you on. The whole idea that I'm thinking as I was ruminating over the actual language and quotes in the New York Times article of July 23rd, 2020, from Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane, it hit me very hard, the language that they were quoting to Dr. Eric Davis being almost exactly the same language that is being used in the Admiral Wilson memo. Basically, the idea that Admiral or Mr. Davis has been having classified briefings to Defense Department agencies about retrievals from off-world vehicles not made on this earth. That just hit me big time. I'm thinking that this is a roundabout revelation that basically changes everything.
There we go. It's not over yet, folks. Michael, thank you so much for coming on. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Jay. Yeah, wonderful job.